Coming up today, Samsung shenanigans, Ant autopilot, selfie security scares, and freedom at last for Chelsea Manning. You're listening to episode 301 of the WireGK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, tech, ideas, business and design. I'm your host, James Temerton, and joining me are Matt Burgess.
Hey.
And for the penultimate time, Amelia Heathman.
Hi.
We won't get emotional this week. We'll get emotional next week, which will be your last WireGK podcast.
You can store all your tears up for then.
Yes. Straight on with the facts. Matt Burgess.
Does Pelham Beach in Sussex mean anything to you?
No.
Nope.
Well, it probably should do, because on the 22nd of July 2012, there was a gathering of pirates, and it was the world's biggest gathering of pirates. Not actual real pirates, but people in fancy dress. How many were there?
You and your guessing. You've been at the Guinness World Book of Records again, haven't you?
I'm not going to comment on that.
Whenever Matt Burgess can't think of a fact, he turns to Guinness.
It's never let me down.
This is a good one. I reckon 3,212.
I was going to go for 1,500.
Well, James, you're the winner, because it was 14,231.
That's a lot 14, of pirates.
14,000?
Yeah, I guess people went a long way to be part of the record.
Yeah. Must be a big beach.
I imagine.
I would
imagine
not
so.
Want to be the person counting 14,000 pirates.
I don't know if they're parrots or not, but probably not.
Yeah, nice. Amelia, what did you learn?
I've gone for an inauguration fact, because today it is the inauguration of the 45th President, Donald Trump. And moving on, the presidents used to be sworn in March to avoid having bad weather in Washington, but this was changed during FDR's second inauguration when it changed to January the 20th. So the coldest one was Reagan's second one in 1985. Guess the temperature.
Ooh, minus two.
Minus nine.
It was minus 13, 7 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yep.
Which, can you imagine standing around outside in the cold for a Republican's inauguration? I mean,
well,
tears would literally freeze.
It would warm the heart, wouldn't it? Keeping on the cold theme, it's been a bit cold in the UK this week, but in Siberia, predictably, it gets even nippier. Oymyakon, a village of around 500 people, is one of the coldest permanently inhabited places on the planet. In January, so right now, the average temperature is minus 50.
That makes me want to cry.
The record low temperature, which was in February a few decades ago, minus 67.7.
How do you survive in that level of temperature?
Special clothes and never going outside.
How do you keep your house warm?
Lots and lots of fire. Yeah, it's crazy cold. So there's that place and another place not too far away in the Russian north where people live all year round in those sort of temperatures. But in the summer, because its climate is so strange, it goes up to 30-odd degrees. So it has the highest temperature range of any place in the world, 100 degrees between its hottest and coldest temperatures in any given year. Our first story this week, Matt Burgess, is all about Samsung.
It is, and it's a quite complex story with many layers and many different characters involved, really. And it's basically involves the highest people in the country, so the president of South Korea and also Samsung's boss and a few others, and is just absolutely mind-blowing in terms of how much of a big story this is, but we've heard very little about it, really.
It's a big story, and there's also a degree to which it's a non-story. But give us the headline. What was it that happened this week?
So this week on Monday, maybe Tuesday, around there, that the boss of Samsung was actually put up for arrest. So prosecutors said they wanted him arrested, and then eventually later in the week a judge says no, he can't be arrested because of it, allegations around him being involved in a bribery scandal with the president and also a few other people.
Right, and it's immensely complicated, but it comes down to access and influence and bribery and huge sums of money that allegedly have changed hands between Samsung and the highest echelons of South Korean government.
Yeah, and so I'll give you a brief timeline, I guess, to how we got to where we are now. So in December, Park Jun-hae, I'm going to probably pronounce a lot of the names terribly here, and I apologise for that, the president of South Korea, was impeached. A vote was taken in the parliament around her ordering of government members to support a merger of two affiliates of the Samsung Group, and also her friend, how much access and influence he had over her during sort of day-to-day business. And then at the, around the same time, Samsung's boss was actually arrested and not arrested, sorry, he was questioned by police in a police station, I presume.
Makes sense.
Around his involvement with this scandal, which is said to be there was £30 million given from Samsung to this friend called Choi Soon-sil.
Okay, so
still with me?
We've had the president of South Korea being impeached. We've got Samsung's president being questioned by police, and we've had more recently prosecutors asking for the arrest of the de facto leader of Samsung, which is the largest company in Korea, one of the largest companies in the world.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So Lee Jae-yong, which is the de facto president of Samsung, and to explain to people, basically in South Korea, lots of the companies are very much family-owned businesses that are very much run by family members who take over from other family members. And Lee, he took over Samsung in 2014 once his father had a heart attack and is still in hospital. So he's not actually the technical boss, but he is in a way. So he's running the business. He's doing all the making all the big decisions and stuff. But he isn't, like, if his father gets well again, he will probably come out and maybe replace him. But he's the leader for now.
Right, and this goes all the way up to him and all the way up to the president of South Korea. But in the end, he wasn't arrested.
No, so he was arrested over charges of... he was not arrested. And Samsung has said that he hasn't done anything wrong, the company hasn't done anything wrong, but the allegations that were put forward were that £30 million had gone to this friend and through the president and channels, basically. So he wasn't arrested, and prosecutors are still looking at it, but it's... just such a big scandal that is ongoing and rumbling on, and the president is still having police and prosecutors are still looking at charges around the president and her involvement, and it's still going to keep rumbling for a few months.
You think of the scale of this story and the comparatively small amount of coverage that it's got. This is the equivalent of, say, Tim Cook potentially facing arrest for some sort of dodgy deal with, well, formerly Barack Obama, and from today, Donald Trump. So the very, very highest positions of office and capitalism within a country, both being called into question as to their relationship, bribery, collusion. There's an awful lot going on here. As you say, all claims that Samsung has vigorously denied. But this also shows a very different way of doing business there. As you say, these are essentially dynasties.
They are, and a lot of these companies, because they're not just it's not just Samsung that's run like this in South Korea. There's a lot of other companies like Hyundai and many others as well who are run in this sort of family way. And in the last few decades, really, there's been a lot of suggestions that they are treated with maybe some leniency by officials, by the court system, by the judiciary, because these companies have really grown South Korea into what it is. Like, it's got, I think it's got the 12th highest GDP in the world, and it's a very small country in terms of its population and everything else. And these big businesses have really built up the country and its reputation. So I think that this is a case where the judiciary said they are keen to investigate Samsung in this. Obviously, they haven't got to a stage where there's been arrest, but it shows that they are actually taking a bit of a approach where they're really taking this sort of thing seriously.
And there's a recognition that perhaps they need to. Some of the people that you spoke to said that it was quite difficult to have the same sort of startup economy that you have in Europe and the United States in South Korea because of the power and influence of companies like Samsung. So there could be all sorts of implications if its power starts to wane.
Yeah, and I think one of the really interesting things about this is obviously there's going to be some sort of reputational impact on Samsung, maybe more so if an arrest comes at a later date, but obviously they're denying this and there has been no arrest made so far. But in terms of the business, it may not have a huge monetary effect, but the president as well, President Park, if she's taken away, then that may have an impact on the economy and how her policies were being run. And one of the main policies that was actually was one of her, like, big things for the country was to develop startups, provide more infrastructure and funding for companies. And basically, if she gets taken out of power, then this creative economy, which it was called, may not continue.
So it's the sort of thing that we see countries like Russia trying to do, diversify its economy to get away from these old, very large, almost monopoly businesses like Samsung. And in Russia, you have plenty of them that sort of emerged out of the communist state. So it's an incredibly interesting story, and one that will take probably years and years to actually come to anything, if it ever comes to anything at all.
Yeah, and I think, well, I think prosecutors got till June to maybe question the president more, or decide whether she is going to be like completely struck off and have all powers taken away. So that's going to be there, but I imagine there'll be ramifications going on longer. And it, obviously, if prosecutors are still looking into Samsung, they may make other decisions. They may appeal to judges to make more arrests. But it's something that is really, really big, and just something that hasn't really permeated into our Western news stream that much, I would say.
Well, there's quite a lot of other stuff going on at the moment that's distracting people. We'll go from the very big news to very small news. Amelia, this week you've been writing about ants.
Yes. You may remember a couple of months ago when we had Matt Reynolds on talking about ants and the way they use ant vomit to talk to one another and pass hormones on. Does everyone remember how fun that story was?
It's impossible to forget ant vomit being used as some sort of form of strange communication.
Yes, very exciting. Anyway, so this week a new paper came out which said that ants have impressive sat-nav skills, and they can find their way home even when travelling backwards or spinning around.
Okay, fine. I mean, is this impressive?
I think it's pretty cool.
I mean, I reckon I could still work out my way to go home if I was walking backwards.
Yeah, but you have to think that you're quite big.
It's
ants
true.
Are very small.
Yes.
And the surroundings that they're in. And the way that it was tested was them dragging food. So obviously they are like, well, you know, they'll go out and they'll forage for food and things like that and bring it back to, what's it called? The ant colony.
Yep.
And then it was based on this idea that when they're walking backwards carrying big loads of food, they can just go off and they can tell where they're going without having to
Okay, so this would
forward.
Be the equivalent of me living in a forest that was huge in comparison to my size.
Yes.
And still being able to navigate while carrying a table.
Yes, and walking backwards.
And walking backwards,
and
yeah.
Not using GPS either.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I can barely find myself like doing anything without a GPS. So the fact of walking backwards in a huge area, and also really it kind of shows how clever ants' brains are, really. That's what it is really coming down to.
Yeah, and the scientists didn't think this was how ants stored information in their brains.
No, so they were... Basically, kind of what happened was they put a little like ant obstacle course, so the ants could only go one way back to their ant colony, and then gave them food to try and see how they carried the food and how they used this direction. So some ants that were traveling backwards just like walked off the wrong way, and that was kind of them just done. They went, you know, off-piste. But some of the ants stopped, put down their food and had a little peek at which way they were going, and then picked the food back up and then traveled backwards back to their nest in the right direction. And it's this kind of peeking behavior that the scientists were really excited about, because it shows that they've got memory of the visual scene, memory of the direction to follow, and memory of the location of the piece of food to like pick it up and take it back with them. And it's the way that these kind of interconnected, and that they used memory of the scene and transferred it onto the memory of the representation of the direction centered on the world around them rather than themselves, and then went home.
So they were able to work out, this was like this on the way here. So on the way back, given that I'm facing backwards, it must be like this.
Yeah, and they're using this little peeking thing. So it shows they've got these like flexible behaviours and memories. So now they want to work out, you know, how's this working? What are the like brain connections that are doing this for them in order to transfer these scenes across? But really, it just shows how sophisticated the ants are. And I thought it was pretty cool.
It's amazing. And also amazing that it's a job to build an obstacle course for ants.
I know.
And then give them cookies.
I know. I really feel like I'm in the wrong career.
Were these the same ants that were used in the vomiting study?
No, I don't think so. I think these are different ones. I think they got some time off after that. You know, they had to do a lot of eating and, you know, vomiting for that study.
It's a tough ant life. Our third story is somewhat more serious. This week, we heard the news that WikiLeaks source Chelsea Manning will be freed from military prison 29 years before her scheduled release. Outgoing President Barack Obama, in one of his last acts of office, said justice had been served. This was something that we thought was probably coming. There had been rumours of it for the last few weeks, but it wasn't a certainty. So to hear this news, I think it broke on Thursday or Wednesday, was really quite remarkable, right?
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, it was. This is a story that has divided opinion, I guess, with some people. And it depends on your position of whether Chelsea Manning, if particularly in the US, there's a lot of people. I think one of the main senators actually came out and said that she's still a traitor, and they still don't think that they think she should be in prison for giving away military secrets.
Right, yeah, this is, so John McCain and an awful lot of Republicans have spoken out to this effect. So he's chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, a very high-ranking Republican. He said it was a grave mistake because Manning had endangered lives. To quote, her prison sentence may end in a few months' time, but her dishonor will last forever. And obviously, this is speaking from a militaristic point of view, and Manning was held in a military prison for the duration of her sentence, but she'll be released in May rather than 2045. So 17th of May, she'll be freed. So that's 29 years before. But crucially, Obama hasn't pardoned Manning, which is what some campaigners had called for. So she's still guilty of the crimes that she committed. She's been through the judicial system. Obama has just decided to commute her sentence because, as he sees it, justice has been served.
I guess it's like a good middle ground between people calling for her pardon and, you know, for Republicans thinking she should be locked up for years and years and years.
Do you think there's some attempt here by the outgoing president to mend his reputation? I mean, an awful lot of presidents will go through this process of pardoning and commuting sentences. Obama, I think, commuted around 60 or 70 in his last couple of days in office. An awful lot of people in prison, I think, on drugs charges. But this was the big headline one. But it's also slightly contradictory, right? Because he had quite a bad record on whistleblowers.
Yeah, didn't he put, when more people were prosecuted under the kind of like for, what's it called, for like leaking military acts and things like that.
Yeah.
Under Obama's presidency than any other president. So
than all other presidents, yeah, combined.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that bad. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it's very symbolic, but it's also symbolic for what he didn't do. Some people said, well, he should pardon Snowden then. But the argument was always that Snowden hasn't been through the justice system, remains in exile in Russia.
Yeah, he hasn't actually been convicted of anything. The US government still wants to bring him back to the US, but he's not actually been convicted of a crime. However, Snowden did say like a few weeks ago, if he tweeted out that if Barack Obama was going to commute or pardon anybody, it should be Chelsea Manning. And that's obviously what has happened. So I think even he would argue that he sees that this is the most appropriate thing, because Chelsea Manning has obviously, she's tried to commit suicide a couple of times, tried to take her life, and been punished for that while in prison. So I think that Obama's obviously seen that that something has gone wrong in the system here, and this is something that Chelsea should be free.
Yeah, so she's been held at a military prison for men. As you say, she twice attempted to commit suicide. She went on hunger strike to try and force the military to provide her with gender transition treatment, and that's horrendous punishment.
Yeah,
it's potentially tantamount to torture. So to tie up what the news of this week, Obama granted commutation of sentences to 209 individuals and pardons to 64 others. As we said, not Snowden. But there's a huge amount of backstory here. Chelsea Manning, as she was then known rather, Bradley Manning. Amelia, why is this name so important?
Well, I'm going to give you a quick 30-second rundown, because it's so complicated and we could stand here talking about it. So I'll start from the beginning with the basics. Back in 2010, Manning leaked more than 700,000 classified Iraq and Afghanistan war logs and diplomatic cables when she was working as an intelligence analyst in Baghdad. So this was obviously against, you know, military secret acts and all that kind of stuff, and it had huge ramifications. The leaks kind of showed the brutality of the military activity in Iraq. There was a leaked video clip, and this was really important, of a US helicopter crew killing around 9 men, including 2 Iraqi journalists. And then another huge part of the leaks was the Guantanamo Bay files, which was showing, you know, the torture that was going on in Guantanamo Bay, and also about all the innocent Afghans and Pakistani people that were being held there for years without charge. So it was really kind of showing like the things that had gone on in Iraq, had gone wrong in Iraq and Afghanistan, and, you know, kind of obviously was all these terrible military secrets about the US government that I think then people said, oh, you know, this isn't the way that military works. Things are supposed to be secret for a reason. We have this duty to protect the people, and in return we should be given this secrecy. Mm. And I think that's kind of where, you know, that was why it was so bad. But
there was a sense, and particularly with that helicopter attack clip, which was really the clip that went around the world.
Yeah.
That was absolutely huge, that if left unchecked, sometimes that power was taken too far or abused or was at odds with what people thought the military should be doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 no, completely. But this was, she leaked this all to WikiLeaks. And this was, I guess, really one of the really biggest huge things that WikiLeaks had, and it was massive, and all the different newspapers joined in with kind of the analysis of it. It's like The Guardian, Der Spiegel, New York Times.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like 7 years ago was such a long time, but I do remember it just being such a huge, so big, so massive.
When you look at the difference of the reputation of WikiLeaks then compared to the reputation of it now, and there's a link here. Julian Assange says that he will go to the US now that Chelsea Manning is set to be freed, but Matt, that isn't quite what people want him to do, right?
No, so it's obviously a really complex situation all round. Like this, the Iraq war cables and everything like that, that was what put WikiLeaks and Julian Assange on the map, what made them a known organisation. And since then, a lot has happened. Obviously, Assange is in the Ecuadorian embassy in London and faces a charge of sexual assault in Sweden, which there's an extradition warrant out for him. And if he leaves that embassy, he will be extradited there. He tweeted out that saying if Chelsea Manning was pardoned, I think it was, or at least some leniency given, that he would go to the US, where I think he's wanted for basically charges connected to the leaking of this information.
Right. Well, there are no charges against Assange in the US, I don't think, but were he to go there, he'd probably be questioned by police. But the real crux of this is that he should be going to Sweden.
Yeah, so he said that he may leave the embassy now that Manning has been commuted, and basically if he does, he will have to go to Sweden. That is how I understand this case, rather than him saying he should go to the US.
But he's made it very clear that he's going to stick to his word, such as it was, that he will leave the embassy and that he will travel to the United States. It's unclear what that means with regards to the ongoing legal issues in Sweden.
Yeah, I would imagine the Metropolitan Police of London will have something to say if he does leave about this and even try to leave the country. So I think it's one of these things where we've got to wait and see. In terms of just pure analysis, I can't see him leaving anytime soon because there'll probably be legal advice given that the police will want to send him to Sweden.
Well, there's been a permanent police presence outside that embassy for how many years has he been inside? Two or three?
Yeah, probably more than that.
An awfully long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so brilliant, brilliant news for Chelsea Manning. As she put on Twitter, she thanked President Obama for giving her a chance and for giving her a freedom back. And as Obama put it, justice has been served, even if some people might disagree. Fourth story, way less serious. Well, kind of serious, in a way. There's been an awful lot of weird-looking selfies on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else this week. People have been using an app from China called MeToo, Meitu, maybe? M-E-I-T-U. Makes your face look funny. But it also does nasty things to your phone.
It does. So just to give a bit of background and context to this, the app, for people that haven't seen it, the app, you take a selfie or you let the app actually access your photo album on your camera or your phone even, and it will put some filters on it. It will basically make you into an anime character, give you some sort of like styled look that is basically really made up and just different to sort of how we
like. It smooths out your face. It makes your eyes bigger and really cartoony. It doesn't really understand facial hair. Makes everyone, as you say, look a bit like a cartoon character. It's well fun, but you know, it's not.
So with this sort of app, when you actually get it on any device, you have to give it permissions. With any app, you have to do that. And for this sort of app, you could understand it's the app saying, I want to access your camera. I want to access your photo album. However, this app actually goes a lot further than that. It accesses those things, but it also asks for permission to a phone's location, the Wi-Fi connection information, the time zone you're in, the local IP address, the SIM card number, whether a phone is jailbroken, and on Android devices, the unique identity number, the IMEI number of the actual phone device itself.
None of which it needs to take a picture of you and make you look like a cartoon character.
No. I think that's one of the main points here that people didn't realize when they started to download this app. This app's been around for quite a while, actually. It's the company released it in 2013 to begin with, in China, where they're based. The company is called Mewtwo, or the same name as the app. And they're actually quite a big company. They had an IPO of, which was worth £4.2 billion. They raised £291 before this in investment funding.
£291 million
even. They said that the app has been installed on more than a billion devices around the world and is used in 26 countries. But it's really just, there was an update earlier this year and it's just really shot up here in the West when people started to use it. And actually, this is the first time that we've heard of it.
But it went viral.
Yeah, it went viral. That's basically...
Not quite sure how, but it did. And it's been all over the place the last couple of weeks.
It really has. And so that combined with the sort of privacy issues or the data collection issues as what have been criticized by people, security experts and privacy advocates and gurus, saying that they shouldn't really need this much data, and they're probably just selling it on and sending it all back to China. Like, the company denies this. They say that the sole purpose is for collecting data to optimize the app's performance, and it says it does not, in capital letters, the statement, sell user data in any form. There are ad trackers in the device, which is probably where it makes its money, through basically your data going to advertisers.
And part of its statement, it was suggesting that it needed these extra permissions because it operated from within China, and collecting that information from outside of China was more difficult. So it needed extra permissions to be able to, triangulate user tracking so that it could serve the right adverts and do data analytics on its app and things like that, right?
Yeah, that's basically what they said. They said that there are different ways of working in China. The internet is obviously monitored there very closely, so it needed to collect more information to comply with their own rules and regulations and different ways around this. But I think one of the big things that is highlighted by this case is what apps let you do. Like, either of you two, you both work in this sector. Do you pay close attention when you download an app to what it's saying it wants to take from you?
Every time.
No, honestly, I have been a bit more, because particularly with when it was August, September last year, with all the WhatsApp sharing your data with Facebook, and that was quite a kickoff. I was using a different phone this week, so I had to re-download some apps, and it was on an Android as well, and I feel like it's more obvious on an Android when it flashes up, like the security permissions, and when it was like, oh, you know, this is going to be doing this. I did take more time to be like, no, instead of just, yes, let me get to my app now.
Yeah, well, I guess you two are exceptions to the norm. I would say that most people, when they download an app, don't look at it in particular. You just see a box that flashes up saying, so-and-so wants to use your location, so-and-so wants to, access your camera, access your albums, and you just click OK. Like, I'm guilty of it sometimes. I'm sure we all are. But I think that this app, there are many other apps like it that are made to collect user data and sell it on. Like, it's the core... Well, one of the core parts of Google's business, for example.
You're not paying for the product, therefore you are the product. And this is, to an extent, a story that we could have done at any time during the last 5-6 years, basically since Android became mass market. It's a bit different on iOS. The restrictions on the Apple Store are better, so IMEI numbers aren't being shared from iOS users, but they are being shared from Android users of this app, which is a small but significant difference. But there are dozens of apps probably on people's phones that have these kinds of permissions or excessive permissions that they don't need. Chances are the last time you downloaded one of these frivolous kind of app of the moment apps, slightly clumsy sentence.
Viral apps,
yes. That it stole all your information anyway.
Yeah, and that's exactly what one of the security experts we spoke to said, who was looking at this. They said that, yes, the things that you can do are probably delete this if you really want to do it, run it on a burner phone, or the apps, other apps have already taken this information. It's already been sold to advertisers elsewhere, which is obviously not the most, the best thing to be doing, just not caring about it. But I think it's a wider consumer issue, is what people want to highlight with this, I guess.
You're doomed. You're all doomed.
That's a bit far.
I mean, it's more like just actually read the terms and conditions, really.
Right. And without harping on about this, they have got better. So, Amelia, you said you use an Android phone. I'm not sure. Had you used one before, or had it been quite a few years?
Not for a really long time.
Yeah. So the permissions used to be kind of badly worded. They were quite difficult to understand. They didn't have little pictures to help make it clearer. They weren't presented in a brilliant way. And there's been an awful lot of user interface changes to try and make it clearer. understanding that people are going to try and skip through them really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But just to make it a bit more difficult to do that and to make it a bit more easier for people to understand what they're actually giving up in return for pretty free photos of their face looking funny.
Yeah, I definitely do think so, particularly when you are on like a random app which doesn't necessarily use your camera and it's like, oh, now we need access to your photos. And it does, I think, I don't know if maybe it's just working here that it has just made me more aware of it. Particularly, I remember last year with when it came out that Uber was tracking your location when you weren't actually using the app. And that was, you know, like, why is Uber doing that? Like, it doesn't need to. And it definitely think makes you question a bit more and makes you worry a bit more about your internet footprint and who's tracking you and why.
Yeah, so basically, go home. When you're there, have a free half an hour. Just flick through your phone and check some of the permissions that you're given. You'll be surprised how much data you give away to people. I did it a few weeks ago and
you know how to have a good time.
Oh, my Friday evenings are wild. But yeah, it's really easy to do on most phones these days, and if you don't check, then this data is being siphoned off and sold about you, and eventually it may come back to hurt you. I don't know, maybe
hurt
not,
but... yes, well, maybe. And something else that you can also do is you can disable all the permissions that apps have. And then when you open them the next time, it will say, this application needs permission to access your... And if you don't want Facebook to have access to your camera or your microphone, then you can just say no. And that just means that when you want to upload a photo straight to Facebook from your camera, you won't be able to do it. But you've made the active decision. And you can leave those permissions off, and the applications will still work to a point. So there is that higher level of control. So as Matt Burgess says, don't spend the weekend watching sport down the pub, playing games or whatever it is. Spend it going through the permissions on your phone. Otherwise, you'll get hurt.
Security is really fun, guys.
It is. We'll have a more fun podcast next week with less homework, I promise. But for this week, we'll leave it at that. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.